This is good. The bitter, which is bad.
Yeah.
Now the time is again 7:10. It is now
7:10.
Ah, no, I will adjust time.
You will change it.
Minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything okay?
Yeah.
Guidance and help to surrender the notion of me and mine, we are stuck into it. We are stuck into this notion no matter how many years we have tried. We are stuck with the desires and fears. Some are expressed and some are unexpressed. So Swamiji, we need your help, we need your guidance, and with that request, I offer my pranam to Swamiji and look forward to learn.
Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harih Om Gananantva Ganapatikum Havamahe Kavim Kavinam Pavishya Yeshtharajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspata Anishvam Vannuti Vishveda Sadhanam Shri Mahaganadhipataye Namaha Sadashiva Samarambham Shankarajarya Madhyamam अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् आत्मस्वरूपबुद्धकणः मे से वित् मी दि फस्ट् वर्स् मुक्तिमिच्छसि चेत्तात विषयान् विषवत्यज क्षमार्जवदयातोष सत्यं पीयूषवद्भज बिफोर आई स्टार्ट एक्सप्लेनिंग दैट वर्स लेट मी से दैट आई फाइंड दिस प्लेस दिस एम्बियंस दिस कांग्रेगेशन वेरी पायस एंड आई फील वेरी मच एट होम with this ambience. And I know most of you personally well. I missed the visits to Toronto for the last 2 years. Till then, I was always looking forward to Toronto visits because I was very comfortable here. And so after leaving the ashram in Salisbury, I used to come here and spend some good time and then go back to the ashram. So, but that did not happen in the last 2 years. It's okay. This is how time moves forward. And things also move forward. We want the things to remain the way they are, but that doesn't happen like that all the time. And we have to reorganize our thinking and readjust ourselves to be into the things as they shape. And I'm happy that I could come this visit, and next visit next year we will see how things will happen. I was thinking what could be the topic that I will take here. For a number of years I was doing Bhagavatam, and plenty of Bhagavatam I have done here, and so this time after giving some careful consideration, and I have selected a text called Ashtavakra Samhita. Generally, you do not find this text to be being taught by people because it is not very convenient to teach this text. It is at the very zenith, the highest point of Vedantic learning it is. And you see, in teaching there could be a few nuances. Like sometimes it is possible that I teach to you and in the focus, my focus while teaching could be on an organization that I represent or an institution that I head, and from that focus I teach. So that teaching will be having one kind of a flavor. And there the attempt would be to bring in people and make them loyal or followers of the organization. That kind of an attempt will be there. The same teaching, the same Gita, the same Upanishad, but the focus will be like that. Somehow I could never do that in my experience. Whether it is a book as my friend very nicely pointed out, very nice words he spoke about me. I'm very grateful to him. And he mentioned that the book is written for the benefit of the student. So, in the case of book also it happens. The book is written to highlight the glory of the subject matter, and through the subject matter the glory of the author. That is one way of writing the book. Or it could be the same book, the same topic. Now the highlight is not the author, the highlight is not even so much the subject matter. The entire focus is on the student who is likely to read this book and how much the student can benefit out of it. So the very simple, very important nuance it is. So in teaching also, the entire focus is about the advantage and benefit that the student can derive from the teaching. That must be the focus. That kind of a teaching will be entirely different. And then, while teaching a text like Bhagavatam, the focus will be on the text and the subject matter. So much effort is given in expounding the verses, the content of those verses, etc. And the text is also very elaborate. And therefore, so much focus is necessarily put on the text. Whereas in a text like Ashtavakra Samhita, the verses are very simple, very small. And the focus cannot be so much on the text, because the text doesn't say a lot. It says very little. And whatever it says in a very succinct way. Very precise, doesn't elaborate. And just makes the statement and leaves it there. And now, taking that small pithy statement as the basis, you have to build up the vision. And now the focus cannot be so much on the text as it is on the vision, as the vision is offered to the students, and the students have to pick up the vision and make it their own. And so that kind of a focus is there on the, in this text. It is a very subtle distinction, and sometimes difficult to put in words also. But anyway, I made a small effort to point out the nuance associated with it. And then, see, why we go to a Vedanta class or a temple or some other pravachanam, some Purana pravachanam, like a Purana or a Ramayana or a Bharata is being expounded by some Mahatma, and we all flock there, we go there, sit there and listen to that for an hour, hour and a half, and then we make offerings. Why do we do all these things? So there must be a reason for it. The reason could only be, the life is not as happy or pleasant as we wish it to be. That is the reason. You just imagine, suppose all the people in Toronto are happy, suppose. I'm not saying they're unhappy, I'm not saying that. They are obviously very comfortable. I mean, physical comforts are of highest degree. Toronto, there is no city like Toronto. It has a big population, obviously. How much I don't know. I may not be like the cities of India, but when compared with the North American situation, a very big population it has. But it doesn't seem to have so much population, because it is so wide and so open. It is a city of open spaces. And if there is a thing called city planning, probably Toronto stands out as the best in this world itself. And they talk in Puranas, they talk of Amaravati, the capital of heaven, ruled by Indra. And I have a feeling that Toronto must be as good as Amaravati itself. So physical comforts are the best possible physical comforts that you find anywhere in this world. They are found in Toronto. So here everything is very well organized. And even the healthcare is also very superior, certainly compared with the US and all that. And therefore people are very comfortable. They are placed very comfortably in a city like Toronto. And suppose people are equally happy also, suppose. They are as happy as they are comfortable. Then no Mahatma would ever need to come near Toronto. Really. And you imagine, suppose all the people are happy, then there will be no need to construct a temple. You don't need a temple. There will be no clientele for temple, for lectures, or for spiritual discourses. There will be no people attending. And the need itself will not be there. So, but these things are needed. A temple is needed, a spiritual discourse is needed, study of Vedanta is needed. People seek one or more of these things because somehow, in spite of providing the best possible comforts, the physical comforts in life, somehow that happiness, happiness is not just you get what you desire and become excited and all that. That is not the only element of happiness. A sense of inner security. You cannot define security as well as you can define insecurity. Therefore, when I say the inner security, I only mean this much, the absence of insecurity. The sense of insecurity is absent. That kind of a state, that is also part of happiness. When you say happiness, so the absence of insecurity is included in that word happiness. And then an element of settledness. I feel I am settled. That kind of a feeling. Sometimes I wonder, suppose I came to Toronto yesterday. I had my usual tiff with the immigration people. And I found that the Canadian immigration, there is a proverb in Telugu, allows elephant to walk from behind but doesn't allow even a fly to go in the front. So like that, they all kinds of people they bring in, but a person like me, they hold their back, they say, why are you coming here, you tell. Like that, so I had to have my usual tiff with the immigration and manage, squeeze in somehow inside. And I have come and sat there in a room. Sometimes I feel, probably on a given day, I am here for a week, but probably I have only just evaluated and just tried to make a joke out of it. Probably I am more settled today in Toronto than many of you are settled in Toronto. That is the point I wanted to make. So that is what is called an element of settledness in life. I am settled. I am settled means what? The way the things are. I am complete. I do not lack anything. There is nothing needed to be done. Effort, you know, no effort is needed to be done. Some work will go on, but an effort aimed at a particular goal, that is a struggle, you know. Suppose still you have to put in effort to accomplish a goal, but where is settlement in that? There is no settlement. And therefore, I am entirely free from struggling. There is no struggle, there is no conflict in life. I am settled. That kind of an element of settledness is also part of happiness. And all these things, they elude people. They are very elusive. And people don't find them. It is not as easy as making money. It is easy to make money, but to discover what I said just now is not so easy. It is not as easy as making money. It is not as easy as creating physical comforts. That is what you are looking for. First, you should know what you are looking for. you are looking for happiness, the word happiness including a sense of the total absence of insecurity, which you may call security, but it is really speaking absence of insecurity only. It is more negative than positive. And a sense of settledness, totally free from anxiety for the future. That kind of a sense of settledness, all of it is included in that happiness. And people are desperately looking for that happiness. And they pursue a religion only for that reason. And they build temples, they flock to temples, and then they flock around the religious leaders for that reason only. And they go after rituals, hoping that they will get a glimpse of what I have just now described, happiness. And they undertake pilgrimages, they do a lot of charities, all for the sake of that elusive sense of happiness. And they come to Veda, they do all kinds of yogas for that only. Yoga, a few asanas that you perform and some pranayama you do for the sake of keeping good health. I am not talking of that. That is a must. You should all do that. But they do a variety of other yogas, like Kriya Yoga, Sahaja Yoga, this yoga, that yoga, a variety of yogas they pursue. Just to grab or to get a glimpse of that elusive, ever elusive happiness. That alone is the reason why we are all here, including the speaker. The speaker speaks and the students listen to, and why we have to engage ourselves in this kind of an exercise. Only because we are seeking that happiness. So that's why we are here. And that is what we are really looking for in life. It is life. It is not a scripture. The scripture should directly connect to life. Then only the scripture has a value. Otherwise, the scripture also has no value. Suppose the scripture describes the heaven. What will all happen to you when you go to heaven after this life ends? What is its connection to the life presently? It is what is called credit religion. So we want cash religion. Now and here, how can I become free from this sense of insecurity and unhappiness, sorrow and fear, anxiety? How can I become free from all that? So everybody is looking for that. And the people pursue many things, all for this single goal of happiness, called ananda. All for this single goal only, they pursue so many things. But often they pursue wealth and discover sooner or later, if they are intelligent, sooner. If they are dull-witted, later, that happiness cannot be gained from wealth. And then they pursue sense pleasures. All the money they accumulate, they throw it around seeking sense pleasures, assuming that happiness is in sense pleasures. Even today, it is very difficult, even for highly evolved people, people who have a lot of experience in life, they fail to discriminate between the happiness which they are really seeking and the sense gratification. They are two different things. People fail to make this discrimination. They are confused so totally, so completely in the society that the happiness that they are seeking, they have a right to seek happiness. Seeking happiness is our birthright, that is our swarupa also. But the confusion is between the happiness that we should seek that we are really seeking, knowingly or unknowingly, and then getting confused that the sense gratification is happiness. There is a fundamental difference between happiness and sense gratification. To explain it, let me say, suppose it is night time, you stay at home and prepare some warm, simple food with one or two items and eat some simple, healthy, nutritious, light food with family and then retire early so that you can get up early next morning and do some asana and pranayama and meditation. That is one scene. Another scene could be you run to a hotel, a distant hotel, which is a 5-star hotel, and then go for dinner there, and they will take their sweet time for serving the food, and you eat all that rich, tasty, rich food, not necessarily nutritious, and you eat that food, and into the night you eat and drink and a kind of a merry making late into the night, and then get tired physically and mentally, and fall upon the, hit the bed and go into a fitful sleep and get up late in the morning. I have described two extreme situations. One is a case of happiness, the other is a case of sense gratification. Not happiness, it is sense gratification. And people do not know the difference between the two. They confuse. The confusion is that this sense gratification, which I have carefully described, they confuse it for happiness. And therefore they pursue that. They assume that there is happiness in it. And they will realize soon that there is no happiness in it. It is not a path of happiness. It is a path of disease, decay and death. They realize that. Then where to pursue happiness now? The world cannot give you happiness anymore. Because the world has only artha and kama. That is all the world has. And there is no happiness in artha and there is no happiness in kama. Then one more thing is left. That is dharma. Dharma in a restricted sense I am saying. The religion. So what we do for the sake of this happiness? We go after religion. The religion has two elements in it, a lower element and a higher element. The lower element consists of rituals, pilgrimages, and mental worships, all the time seeking this and seeking that, and austerities, etc. That is the nitty-gritty of the religion, and we pursue that with the fond hope that we will get that elusive happiness. You don't get it there. In religion also you won't get. You'll be doing any number of rituals, etc., but that happiness, that sense of settledness, you won't get. And how to get that happiness? That gaining of that happiness, there is a name given to it in Vedanta. It is called Mukti. You see, very interestingly, what I am seeking is in a positive way, I am seeking happiness, but what is offered is not a positive word it is. It is not ananda which is offered, it is mukti which is offered. And by implication, you get ananda. You see the difference? Ananda per se in a positive way is not offered. Only mukti. Mukti is freedom, liberation. Freedom or liberation is always from something. And therefore, I am seeking happiness, but really, what you seek, what you get, ultimately what you get from the scripture is not so much happiness, it is only liberation or freedom from something. That is the mukti. Another name for ananda is mukti, freedom. So what you need to seek really is not happiness. In fact, I tell you how. As long as you seek happiness, you won't get it. You see, why do you seek happiness? Because you are unhappy. You got the catch there. The moment you seek happiness, you have proved yourself to be already unhappy. And so you will not become happy. And therefore, happiness is such an elusive thing that as long as you seek it, you won't get it. Therefore, what you have to seek is not even happiness, really speaking. You have to seek freedom, liberation, mukti. That is what you have to seek. Freedom from something. You see, another important point I wanted to make. You see, the mic is doing perfectly all right. And you are all listening perfectly all right. It is about my throat discomfort. You have to put a little more energy into it. Yeah, a little more. We don't ask them. They are listening it perfectly all right. Only now I am comfortable. Now I am more comfortable. That puts a little less pressure upon my throat. You see, this is the conundrum of human existence, that what we need is, we should know what we need, what we are really seeking, that first we should know. We should first realize. There are a few things in that realization. First you should realize that what I am really seeking is not wealth. Artha. That is a big realization. Many people don't realize that. They run after wealth. The entire world is like that. And then they have to realize that kama, means pursuit of sense pleasures, is not what I really seek. That also they should realize. They don't realize that also. Then the next step of realization is that what I really pursue is not this the religion that the masses follow, the nitty-gritty of the religion, the outer form of the religion which the masses follow. The majority of the humanity follows that part of the religion only. That is not what exactly you are seeking, really. That is not exactly what you seek. It may be a stage. You may go through that stage. Everybody goes through that stage. But that is not the goal. That is not the end in itself. You have to come to that realization. That is the third realization. And the fourth realization is, what you are seeking is not so much positive as it is negative. You are not seeking like ananda. Ananda like a huge, huge mass of ananda that you are seeking. No. That is not what you are seeking. Really speaking, you are only seeking freedom from something. It exactly amounts to this. It is like we are like jail inmates. We are bound inside a jail, in a cell, and we feel very stifled, and we want freedom. That is all we are seeking. And another name for that is happy ananda, you can call it, but that is exactly what you are seeking. You are seeking freedom from the bondage. That is what you are seeking. That means what? We are in a bondage situation. We are bound people. And we do not have freedom. And that is what we are really seeking. This is a big realization. This is the fourth realization. And you have to realize that. Till then there is no there is no peace and happiness in life till you realize this point. And finally, you have to, this is the very important point, you have to realize that this freedom, you have to accomplish it for yourself, by yourself, all by yourself. You cannot depend upon the so-called guru. That is what we try to do. Suppose a guru comes to Toronto, all the shishyas flock, they run towards him. They assume the guru to solve the problem of samsara. The bondage is called samsara in Sanskrit. We expect the guru to solve the problem of samsara for us. You see, to an extent, less or more, we all have this problem. That's why I'm telling you. Very frankly, I'm telling you. I'm exploring human life together with you. Suppose some big Mahatma, very famous guru, arrives in Toronto and the message is circulated and we rush. And we are willing to pay reverence to the guru. Also, we are willing to pay some fee also, whatever name you give to it. You may give some very pleasant name to it, like Dakshina, etc. But that is what it is, really speaking. You are willing to pay a certain amount of money also, liberally, provided he takes the responsibility for our freedom, for our happiness. And this is what we are doing. Generation after generation after generation, including the present generation. And our forefathers also have done this, and they failed in getting that happiness. And we have been doing it all our life. Until now we did not succeed either. And you are not going to succeed, because that is not the right way. You have to give up this notion that another person, another human being, whom you give a status of guru, etc., will take responsibility for your freedom, for your happiness. Somehow he will get it for you. This notion should be gone. It doesn't serve any purpose. Then, as part of the same realization, you should also know that for getting that freedom from the bondage of samsara, which is very stifling thing for us on a day-to-day basis, getting that freedom is, it cannot be accomplished by any quick fix method. People are looking for some mysterious technique. They are looking for a technique. A technique will set us free. Not the worldly technique, some mysterious, religious or philosophical technique will set you free. And so people are looking for the technique. And the guru has the technique. As long as you are looking at it that way, you will not get it. And then some people, the technique, the word technique can be given another name called mantra. Mantra is a technique. There is a particular statement that one has to chant. And the guru has it and he will give it to you. Now you will chant it a certain number of times. That becomes a technique. And that technique will set you free. You are again deluded. Mantra has a value. Mantra will help you. But mantra practiced as a technique, given by the guru as a technique, received by the student as a technique, and practiced as a technique, will set me free. It won't happen. Mantra has a value. We pass through all these stages. But liberation is not the outcome of a technique. Freedom is not the product of a technique. It is not the product of an effort. Did you hear that? Nasti akrutaha krutena. Akrutaha mokshaha, freedom, kritena, by effort, nasti, it is not there. That is the law of Vedanta. You will not get it as the result of an effort. If it is the result of an effort, we will put all the effort required and get it. Like going to the top of the Everest. It is a result of an effort, and we put in the effort. People go to Mountaineering Institute in Dehradun and spend 2 years there and get all the required training and physical exercise and all that, and then go to the top of the Everest, put a flag there and come down. Nobody can stay there. So it is the result of an effort. Similarly, if the freedom, moksha, is the result of an effort, you will get it by a technique, but it is not. A technique won't solve, it will not help you gain that freedom. And therefore, I have given a list of multiple mistakes that people do. And some one or more of these mistakes, they are responsible for our failure in getting that freedom in life. For us remaining bound in this cell, in a jail cell called samsara, and so a technique won't set you free. I am not belittling anything. I am just examining the situation in a very objective fashion, together with you. It's not that I have a formula. So as long as you are looking for a formula, you will not get it. Because moksha is not a formula. It is something which you have to discover. Discover. Remove the cover. Within you. In you. You have to, something which you have to discover. That security, that happiness, that freedom, that settledness, all of that, it is something which you have to discover in yourself, by yourself. So the outer guru has a role to play. The role is, the guru's role is that of a pointing finger. This is the Zen master's illustration. You see, human mind has this weakness of worshipping the pointing finger. And the Zen master's saying is there, as long as you worship the pointing finger, you will not see the moon. So, therefore, a mantra can act like as a pointing finger. The lower religion can act like a pointing finger. Taken properly, it can act as a pointing finger. And a guru can act as a pointing finger. But ultimately, you have to discover the moon. And therefore, the entire responsibility of discovering the truth, discovering the reality of yourself rests squarely on your shoulders. And this you have to come to understand. You have to stop looking for techniques, schemes, magic formulas. You have to stop looking for all this. They will not set you free. You have to look for freedom. That is what you have to look for, mukti. When I say freedom, it is not physical freedom. You need physical freedom. Like when you are sitting, you need some comfortable space to sit. In a very narrow place, you cannot sit also. So you need, in India, when we travel in the trains, in a compartment where 72 people can sit comfortably, some 200 people sit inside. It becomes very congested. There is no physical freedom. And so they have to put one more bogey so that some extra physical freedom will come. So we need physical freedom, but that is not the freedom that I am talking about. Then there is a political freedom. That is also not what I am talking about. In fact, it is called independence. It is not freedom. It is independence. You have a right to vote. And in a way, you will decide, in a collective way, people will decide who will be our president, next president, etc. That is the political freedom they call it, but really speaking, it is independence. Even physical freedom is also independence only. What we need is that inner psychological freedom. That is what we are needing, what that we need. Inner psychological freedom. That is mukti. That is what you need. You see, let us look at our lives. We were always dependent. In fact, I do not hesitate to say, we are psychologically dependent people. That is what we are. Whole life we have been like that. In the youth, we depended upon parents, and then on job, on wealth, and on the family setup, and also to begin with, the spouse, the husband depends upon the wife, vice versa. Then both of them together depend upon the children, and vice versa. You see, if you allow me to look at our existence, please don't mind my talking about all this, because I am discussing the word mukti. I have named it as a cognitive transformation. And meditation. What we are doing is meditation. We are meditating upon what is called life. You see, I was in Hrishikesh. There is a walk, boat walk like. It is not boat walk, it is cement walk. And also the Ganga is flowing. In a short, small distance, the Ganga is flowing. And then there is a small sand dune like thing. And on the other side, the Ganga is flowing. On this side of the sand dune, there is a pool, water pool, which the fishermen have dug. The water in the pool is from Ganga only, but there is no flow in this pool. It is a stagnant pool. In a way, it is part of the Ganga, but still it is not part of the Ganga. And Ganga is swiftly flowing, whereas this pool, it remains associated with the river, but remains a stagnant pool. There are mosquitoes and other things, and a small moss-like substance, thin layer of impurity is floating on the surface. The fisherman must have made it there. Our life is like that. There is the swift flow of life, universal life, cosmic life. Look at here, the trees, the plants, that is all flow of life. The birds in the sky, the birds in the nests, the animals that roam on the surface of the earth, underneath the water, there is so much biodiversity of life. Underneath the crust of earth also there is so much life. It is a swift flow of life all around. In this flow of life, I make a small pool, a stagnant pool. In this pool, me, my family, my career, my bank account, like that, we barricade ourselves in that pool. We barricade from the whole flow of life. And we live in that pool, whole of our life. And we hope. And my religion, in that pool, the gods and goddesses that we worship are included in that pool. The religion is also part of that pool. My caste, my creed, my religion, my region, my nation, all of that is included in that pool. We have barricaded ourselves in that pool. And that pool becomes a prison house. And a prison house of self-centered activity. So much activity inside that pool. But it is all the self-centered activity, endless self-centered activity. In that pool of life, we are caught in our own thoughts. The pool is like that. And our own agony, our own superstitions, our own routine of habit, that is how we are caught in that pool. And we call it life. It is not life. It is stagnation. And we need freedom from that. You see, I am presenting a case for mukti. I am cautiously building it up. I know time is passing, but still I am still building it only. I am not yet done with the building up of a case of mukti. You see, we have our agonies and our issues of life which demand solutions. Without settling these agonies and these issues of life, there cannot be happiness. And we are desperately looking for solutions. Once again, I submit that these solutions are not there where you are looking for them. Your problems, some more money cannot solve. I am repeating the whole story. Your problems cannot be resolved by making some more money or by enjoying some more pleasures. Suppose all of us go on a cruise for 2 weeks and come back. Will our agonies be solved by that? No. Some more pleasures. Okay, let us all go to Russian tour or Europe tour. Very highly sophisticated, most comfortable, luxurious tour of Europe for 2 weeks, let us have and come back. Will our agonies be resolved by that? No. Let us all do some more rituals. Will it resolve? No. You see, our situation is a catch-22. We are suffering from these agonies, these predicaments, and we are looking for solutions and we are not getting them. The reason is you are looking for the solution in the wrong place. And one more point thing I will point out. I am living a life like this stagnant pool kind of life, barricading myself from the hole. I am living a life, and the life, in that pool-like life, there is a challenge is thrown up. And now I am getting excited and getting disturbed, perturbed. How to solve this problem like that? Like that, in life we are always looking at these issues in isolation. An issue crops up, you solve it. And it gets solved one way or the other. And then before we take some respite, one more issue will crop up. And then struggle, now run around to solve this issue. Like that, we are jumping from one crisis to another crisis to another crisis in life. Under this crisis, we are addressing in isolation. So mother in law has a problem with the daughter in law, that is a crisis, you address it in isolation. And the finance situation is going up and down, that is a crisis, so you also address it in isolation. The son or daughter is not cooperating very much, that is another crisis, so address it in isolation. The old age has thrown up some health issue, that is another crisis, you address it in isolation. Like that, we look at life as a conceptual pieces and bits, and try to address the issues and crises in isolation, everyone in isolation. We do not look at life as an organic whole. So, I sincerely submit to you that every one of us, without exception, have our agonies and we have problems, we have to solve them. But the solution doesn't lie outside of you. The solution is in you. You have to bring out that inner transformation cognitive transformation that you have to bring out. You have to address the issues in a very fundamental way. You cannot look at them in a very superficial way. Suppose you get a headache, you take a Tylenol and it will be resolved. But suppose you get this headache one more time next day, how will you do? You take one more time Tylenol. But suppose it comes, repeats third day, fourth day. Now Tylenol is not the solution. Now Tylenol is not going to help anymore. Now you have to address that issue in a more fundamental way. Similarly, in life, we are moving from one crisis to another crisis to another crisis to another crisis. Life is flowing away, the air is going out, and not much is left. So this is how we end life. So you have to address this issue in a more fundamental way. And there is a name for all this. It is called Mukti, freedom. Freedom from the dullness of life, the contradictions of life, so much pain in life, freedom from so much pain in life, freedom from the conflicts of life, freedom from the utter boredom of life, and freedom from the utter meaninglessness of life. So that is the freedom which we need. You need freedom. That is what you need. If money or pleasures or some religious activities, if they contribute to that freedom, they are worth holding on to. But if they are not contributing to that freedom, then they don't have any value. Even the rituals, the mantras, the gurus that we pursue, if they give us that freedom from these conflicts of life, then they are worth pursuing. Otherwise, they are not serving any useful purpose. Some more of it is not going to solve the problem. Therefore, you have to examine the life in a very fundamental way, because all these things on which we depended all along the life, they have failed us. And so, under this psychological dependence, it remains with us. And I tell you, psychological dependence leads to fear. When you are psychologically dependent, you will not be secure anymore. There will be insecurity. And when there is fear, insecurity, they set a conflict in motion. Also, another small thing, an important thing I forgot to mention, now I am mentioning it. We are very superstitious people. We run after so many superstitions while living in that stagnant pool of me and mine, with an entirely self-centered activity of life. We become victims of enormous superstition, countless superstitions. You need freedom from all this. Hey Tata, Tata in the verse means dear son, is an address of love. If you want freedom, mukti mucchesi chet Tata. So you see how he begins this Ashtavakra. I will tell you a little about Ashtavakra. He was a great saintly person called Rishi, Ashtavakra Maharshi. He is called Ashtavakra because in the body he is totally deformed person. Vakra is a deformation. He has 8 deformations. Means what? Almost in every joint he is deformed. You count, in the neck he must have been deformed. And in the hands he must have been deformed. And the waist also must have been deformed. Then the knees must be deformed. And then the toes and the heels and the ankle that must have been deformed. That has become only 5. 3 more. Must be his mouth must have been deformed. And his fingers must have been deformed and the toes also must have been deformed. That must be 8. The whole person is a deformed person. And he cannot walk like a unitary way. He like a very broken up thing is walking forward. One day, the king Janaka has in his court all scholars of Vedas and the scriptures he have assembled, all the rishis. And Janaka is sitting on his throne, and he is having a discussion with all these scholars in the court, king's court. Then this Ashtavakra entered. He came. All of them looked at him and could not hold back their laughter. They all laughed. Could not hold back by looking at this totally deformed person. He is a study in deformation. And then all of them laughed, they understood, they felt embarrassed that they are laughing at a deformed person. And so they are controlling their laughter. Then Ashtavakra laughed. Even Janaka was also laughing when he looked at this deformation. Then Ashtavakra laughed. Then Janaka, all of them controlled their laughter. Janaka asked, "Sir, we all laughed because by looking at you we could not help laughing. But how come you laughed?" Then he said, "I laughed because you have corrupted a number of shoemakers, not shoe, leather merchants, and sitting, keeping them, a number of leather merchants you keep around and discussing, and that's why I laughed." That is what he said. Leather merchants? All these rishis are leather merchants, including you. You are also a leather merchant. What do you mean by leather merchants? We are not leather merchants. You are indeed leather merchants. Because, why did you laugh? Because in your opinion, Ashtavakra is a physical body. And therefore, you are laughing at Ashtavakra means the physical body is Ashtavakra. And why I am a physical body? Because you all happen to be, take yourself to be physical bodies. Therefore, you identify with the physical body. Physical body is nothing more worthier than a mass of leather and flesh and bones and blood. That is what a physical body is. You find it is worthwhile to identify with a physical body. That's why I named you as leather merchants. Then Ashtavakra was like that. He never knew how to speak in sweet tones or in a very diplomatic way. He only knew one way, to speak bluntly. That is what he said. Then Janaka fell upon his feet. "Hey Maharshi, please excuse us. Yes, what you said is true. We are identified with the physical body. And we are like that stagnant pool I have described. There is the swiftly flowing river there, but we remain stagnant pools juxtaposed to the river. So we were living like that, and true, you have indeed said well, and so please teach us how to become free from this bondage of samsara." Then he said, "Hey Tata, dear son, mukti michyasi chet." If that is what you are seeking, you see, people, they follow this example, that I have a headache, therefore take Tylenol. That is how. You see, people worship, see you examine how they worship. So, I have some physical ailment, therefore, O Hanuman, please remove that ailment to me. And I have some, my bank account is a bit weak, therefore, O Lakshmi Devi, please make my bank account better. This is how we worship. All our gods and goddesses are molded by our desires and fears. And therefore, our worships are also included in that stagnant pool. So you need freedom from this self-centered activity. that freedom from psychological dependence. That is what we need. And if you need it, now I am giving you a formula, take it. What is the formula? Vishayan Vishavat Yaya. And Kshamadyavadayatosha Satyam Piyushavat Bhaya. This is poison, you keep it away. And this is nectar, you partake it. Over, you get your freedom. You get your moksha, mukti. No one here. Not after that you go into heaven. No one here. So, what is it that I have to give up as poison? So, you have to give up as poison the vishayan. Vishavat tyaja. So, vishayan, vishavat tyaja. You see, this point one has to carefully examine. Vishaya is what? This is the discrimination between happiness and sense gratification. That is the discrimination. I already mentioned it, so please bear with me. I am managing to speak. My throat is not entirely doing well. But somehow managing to speak. Are you okay with my...
Yeah.
Okay. You see, there is a sense object. It could be shabda, sound, like music, etc. You listen to music and become gratified. I don't say happy. Gratified. Because suppose in music somebody stops, you become unhappy right away. So, it is a gratification. Then, Shabda Sparsha, like wearing some good dress or sitting on a very comfortable lazy boy's sofa, that is Sparsha, and become gratified. And then Rupa, you see forms and become gratified. You see, like people are so much attached to Namarupa that they have a camera with them all the time. Earlier they used to hack a camera from the shoulder. Now 2-in-1 has come. The cell phone, it doubles as a camera also. And therefore, they are very busy all the time clicking the camera and capturing the Namarupa. That shows how much gratification they are trying to grab through Rupa. All the time keeping this. I tell people, come on, give up Namarupa. Don't go after Namarupa like that. But they don't, they are so addicted to Namarupa that they should have photography going on all the time. And once a person asked me in a satsang, what is wrong with photography? No, it is not about right or wrong. It is nothing wrong in it. It is a democratic country. You have money to purchase a camera and go on clicking, so you can do it. But the point is not right or wrong. The point is you are badly addicted to what is called Rupa. You see a Rupa, you have to click it so that you can see it again. Why should you see it again? Why not see another Rupa? You see, when you meet life, do you meet it in the freshness of the present moment? Or you meet life through the prism of memory? How do you want to meet life? I prefer to meet life in the freshness of the present moment. Therefore, I see a flower and it is most beautiful, and therefore I look at it. And there is a communion, there is a kind of appreciation of that beauty of the flower and the glory of it, and there it ends. I don't want to convert that meeting into a pleasant experience and then record it so that I can revisit it later and get some pleasure out of it. Is that necessary? It is an addiction. So this is how we meet Rupa. Then Rasa, taste buds. We are constantly going after rich and tasty food. While pursuing food, the food is the most important element among the five. While eating food and preparing food, and while making arrangements for that preparation and eating of food, making arrangements, means in the house, adequate space is allotted for the kitchen and dining place, and the kitchen is equipped extremely well with the most modern gadgets, and also the kitchen is equipped with all kinds of groceries are stored, and so now the kitchen is a place where choicest dishes can be prepared in the shortest possible time and served, so that at any given time, so that you can enjoy the food more and more and more. This is how we look at the kitchen. Did I describe it adequately, practically? Very unfortunate it is. Very unfortunate. And I tell you, we need so many hospitals and so much of medical establishment and so many medicines, all because of our this attitude towards the kitchen. That's for the single reason. If only we eat right food in moderate quantities, you don't need a doctor. In this creation, only human beings need a physician. No other life form needs a physician unless the life form comes into contact with the human being. Till then, cats, like Indian street dogs, they don't need a physician. Only the dogs which are reared by humans need a veterinary doctor. The animals are also like that. They don't need a physician. Only humans need a physician. Because for animals, eating is to sustain life. For humans, eating is a means of sense gratification. Rasa. And then Gandha. Gandha means pursuit of perfumes. There is a perfume in everything. Everything there is a perfume. Like you are going in a car. What is a car? It's a bubble with four wheels. And you sit inside that bubble and move forward. And you create some perfume inside that bubble. Why do you need perfume inside the bubble? You need fresh air inside the bubble, not perfume. But we need a perfume. Whether fresh air or not, we put some perfume into it. Similarly, instead of seeking fresh air, we pursue perfume in everything, in a soap. What is soap? Soap is an impurity that we apply to the body so that the original impurity and this added impurity both can be together washed away and become fresh. But we put some fragrance into that impurity. And then in everywhere, you put a perfume. So much so what happens, you know, the lungs, they have a very sensitive soft tissue. The lining of the lungs, very sensitive tissue it is. And that soft tissue, it has the power of absorbing oxygen. It cannot deal with the perfumes. It can only deal with oxygen. It keeps away nitrogen, carbon dioxide, etc. and absorbs oxygen and releases carbon dioxide. That is the job. So what all you need to inhale is fresh air, not perfume. But we put perfume. You see, nature has some perfume. That would have been enough, but we add synthetic perfumes. These are the five sense organs, five sense objects. And what we do, we establish a contact between the sense organ and the sense object. We establish a contact. And as long as that contact is maintained, we get what we think happiness. You don't get happiness. You get sense gratification. That is what you get. Happiness is, you get happiness when the thought ceases. You become free from thinking. There is a thing called freedom from thinking. Please make note. You need it. We all desperately need freedom from thinking. In sleep we get it fortunately. Some of it we need in the daytime while we are awake also. Freedom from thinking. When thought ceases, when you get the freedom from thinking, in that freedom from thinking, there is happiness. That is different from the sense gratification. So you have to see clearly the distinction between happiness versus sense gratification. And instead of seeking happiness, which is the right thing to do, you should seek happiness. But because of the confusion between one and the other, also called delusion, because of the delusion, we seek sense gratification. You see, modern civilization is based on an enormous importance given to sense values. Modern civilization is like that. This is a civilizational crisis. It is not some silly physical problem that can be resolved one way or the other. It is a civilizational crisis. Like, for example, you come to America, United States, obesity is a public health hazard. Now, the biggest public health hazard. And overweight and obesity, if you put together, 65% of the population either overweight or obese. It's a huge hazard. All of it because of wrong food habits. You see, recently the Mayo Clinic came out with a pamphlet in which they proved scientifically by designing elaborate experiments. Studies, medical studies, they proved that even people who have a tendency of getting heart attack due to genetic reasons, the gene itself has that aberration by which the person is surely to get the heart attack. Even those people, if they eat right, the genetic situation itself will be altered and they can become free from heart attack. That is the proof. You see, even the genetically created diseases can be stopped by proper eating. And then he gives how to eat properly and all that. So, the sensate values, the extraordinary significance that we give to sensate values, is the crisis that the entire modern civilization is facing today. You see, there is a thing called science. Science is the pursuit of truth, whereas technology is a byproduct of science. Science is neither good nor bad, whereas technology could be good as well as bad. Both it could be. So, science versus technology. A similar situation is present with reference to philosophy versus the religion. Philosophy is the pursuit of truth, like science is the pursuit of truth. Religion is the byproduct of philosophy. In philosophy, there is no good nor bad. Because truth is truth. It is neither good nor bad. It is beyond the opposites of good and bad. Whereas the religion could be good as well as bad. It could be good, it could be bad. Therefore, so anyway, science doesn't make us suffer. It is the technology pursued wrongly. So you want to use science for sense gratification through technology or for fulfillment of our desires or we prepare armaments and use them for destruction. So we use technology for gratifying our anger and our hatred, etc. This is all technology. Science is pure. Anyway, coming to the point, this is how in our life we give extraordinary significance to pursuit of sense pleasures. We should forthwith stop it. Vishayan Vishavat Tyaja. It is poison. Look at it as poison. And so give it up. Like sugar. Sugar is called white poison. So give it up. Don't use it. So now what to do now? Suppose we give up sugar, what to do? You use jaggery or brown sugar. Jaggery you use. In moderate quantities you use. Only when you have to prepare a sweet dish you use it in a small quantity. And you don't prepare sweet on a daily basis. Prepare sweet once in a week. And you use jaggery, not sugar. And in coffee, tea, you need sugar, you don't put sugar. Drink less coffee by not putting sugar. If you put sugar, you will drink more coffee. By not putting sugar, drink less coffee. By not putting sugar, drink less tea. Don't put sugar in milk. Drink milk as it is. Don't put sugar in it. Eat oatmeal as it is. Don't add sugar to that. Sugar is poison. Give it up. Vishavat Tyaja. You give it up and see how your taste buds will reorganize. You will now enjoy the natural taste of the milk, the natural taste of oatmeal. All the natural taste you will start enjoying. You don't need sugar. Sugar is needed. Even coffee, the real natural coffee taste you will enjoy without sugar. No, it is bitter. Okay, don't drink that. It is bitter, why do you drink? Or drink a little. Don't drink too much of coffee. Drink a little. You see, once I remember a professor, he asked for tea. And so the person brought tea. Tea is hot boiled water and a bag of tea bag. Put it. He gave it. And then he is bringing milk. He said, I don't want milk. Then I said, you don't need milk. I want to drink tea, not milk. I want to drink tea. So if you want to drink tea. Why do you want to add milk? And then when you over and above that, why do you add sugar? Don't use sugar. This sugar I am saying so much because Vishamatyaja, the same thing you have to apply for everything. Shabdasparsha, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha, you have to apply for all of that. If music, if some devotional music occasionally as an aesthetic way, you enjoy some music, that is fine. But music becomes an addiction, you have to give it up. Food is the best example. So sugar, you give up. It is poison. Vishamatyaja. And see how your health improves. And then diabetes will not come anywhere near you. Generally, lifestyle diseases will keep a distance from you. And then salt. Salt is poison. White poison. Don't add salt. Excess salt don't add anywhere. You need to add a little salt for some of the dishes. And so, a little salt. Don't add too much salt. And don't add salt to buttermilk. Add to so much spice. If you add chili, you have to add salt. Reduce chili, salt will be reduced. So like that, you have to reorganize, you have to cultivate the right kind of taste. You see, the tastes that we pursue, this is tasty, that is tasty, like that, whatever tastes that we pursue, they are cultivated tastes. For example, we cultivated taste for coffee. Coffee is a bitter liquid, it is. There is no taste in it. It is very bitter to the taste. But we cultivated taste for bitter. Similarly, we cultivate taste for tea. These are all bitter liquids. So we cultivate the taste. So you can cultivate the opposite also. So you have to carefully cultivate. It is doable. It is possible to remain without diabetes or anything close to diabetes, and also without BP. Blood pressure is a silent killer, it is. And without these problems, you can live happily. However long you can live happily. Quality life. You see, I tell you, the freedom that you feel when you are healthy, there is a freedom in health. That freedom, so you are totally free from the dependence. It is not only physical dependence, it is psychological dependence. Free from anxiety, concern, that is the freedom. The freedom that you experience because of good health, no pleasure can equal it. You have to discover it. You see, myself and people of my age, they are bothering they are bothered by diabetes. And I don't have anything near to call it diabetes. What a freedom it is. I mean, it's not the Swami generally I'm telling. That freedom, what you need is freedom. Now, you have to choose. Do you want freedom or you want sense of gratification? You want to gratify taste buds or you want freedom? An unwise person, you know what he will say? I don't know, I don't care for that freedom and all that. I want my food. That is the delusion. It works like that. Now freedom, we will see it later. First we will settle that. Add some more soda. Freedom, etc. We will see later. We will take a pill. So, you see, we psychologically depend upon the pill. It is not physical dependence anymore. It is psychological dependence. So, anyway, coming back to the point, you see, you have to understand that all the pleasures derived from sense objects, through the sense objects, are transient and very short-lived they are. And you pursue them more and more, you are in the danger of losing your physical health and also psychological freedom. You lose all that. You become very concerned and unhappy. You see, people, suppose there is a family, well-to-do family, rich people, they have everything, all comforts are there, but they remain unhappy. They are in conflict among themselves. Ego clashes are there. They have multiple complaints against each other. Like that, in an unhappy ambience they live. They are unhappy with them, in spite of the best possible comforts all around. Suppose they all decide, let us say, they all decide to eat very healthy food. Suppose they decide and make appropriate changes. You know what will happen? all their illnesses will disappear right away. Not only that, the conflicts between them also will disappear. And the mutual distrust and unhappiness that comes out of it, slowly all of that will melt away. You know why? Jite rase jitam sarva. You conquer the test words, you have conquered everything. So, suppose you have an ambience at home where food is prepared and consumed to promote health, physical health. That is how you prepare. The fruits are served and a very moderate kind of food is served and not very spicy, not full of sugar, etc. Very healthy food is served and consumed with love. Not only you will remain physically healthy, but also you will be psychologically happy. The atmosphere in the family changes. It will undergo a change for the betterment. Therefore, you should not separate the psychological and the physical. They are closely interdependent. That is what I mean. So, therefore, vishayam, vishayam, vishavat, tyajyat. You see, as long as you are engrossed in the pursuit of sense pleasures, you will remain far from truth. The truth of the self-realization, which leads to moksha, remains at a long distance. If you want real freedom, you cannot have that real freedom while you are imprisoned in the sense pursuits and the desires that they entail. Once you are pursuing a sense pleasure, it leads to a variety of desires. And now to fulfill those desires, you have to pursue lots of activities, meaningless activities. Therefore, you have to understand that the sense pleasures the role in a person's life has to be carefully appreciated. I will conclude that issue, that topic, by giving a statement that you should think about. You imagine, you just visualize, not imagine, you visualize a queen in a palace with best possible comforts all around, with servant maids and all that. A queen in a palace. And an illiterate woman, illiterate, because the literacy also contributes to some physical well-being and all that, physical comforts and all that. So an illiterate woman, an old woman, in a hut, living in a hut in a remote place. You compare these two. Would you get the picture? Now, both of them will have, you please think about it, both of them will have the same cycle of pleasure and pain in life. Can you believe it? If that is the case, then why are we running after all these physical pleasures of life? This point, you see, people find it hard to even theoretically believe that it is possible that way. I will tell you one example, a secret of life. You want to be happy in life. There is only one way to be happy. Only one way. Make others happy. Never seek happiness for yourself. Always strive to make others happy. You will not know what is unhappiness in life. You tell this to anybody and ask them, can they believe it? They will say, no, I cannot believe it. That is how they say. It is so difficult to believe it. Similarly, a queen, as I described, and an illiterate old woman, they have the same pressure pain circular. If that is the truth, and if you can get the truth into your head, then you will understand what a waste of effort in life. So much effort we have wasted in the pursuit of these sense pressures. For no reason we have wasted it. And there will be a tremendous transformation in the consciousness of the person. That is what we mean, a cognitive transformation. So, I will continue this verse tomorrow. We will just do a small meditation now. If you can, you dim the light, keep on up the lights and make it as dim as you can. I will introduce, that is nice. I will introduce this guided meditation for a few minutes every day. Starting with today in a simple session. You deliberately sit upright. Maybe you are already sitting upright, doesn't matter. Deliberately sit upright. Keep the shoulders and the hands loosely, again deliberately, loosely. That helps you relax completely. Pay attention to the eyes. Squeeze the eyes one time. And keep them lightly closed. Sport a smile on the lips. And watch the mind. How to watch the mind? Now, the question has no answer because watching the mind is not a technique. If it is a technique, how can be answered? But it is not a technique. It is your natural witnessing awareness. Therefore, don't ask the question, how? Try to watch the mind. Now, that is better. Try to watch the mind. When you try to watch the mind, it is very interesting to note that the mind becomes quiet. That is interesting. You try to watch the mind. If you fail, try again. Trying is the all important word. Try to watch the mind. As you do that, in fact, there is no doing in it, but still we say doing. As you try to watch the mind, The mind becomes quiet. Very simple. You see, the mind becomes quiet naturally, without you over imposing. The mind becomes quiet. And then there is freedom from thinking. When the mind is quiet, there is freedom from thinking. Freedom from thinking. And that freedom is love. Freedom is love. Contemplate upon this, namely, watching the mind and staying with the freedom from thinking. Again, watching the mind, freedom from thinking. Those two phrases, you hold on to them. Slowly open the eyes.
Yeah.
He got the equivalent, Indian equivalent of Nobel Prize.